This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Hitting the news you might have missed. It's Denton's Daily News.
All right, Denton, what do you got?
All right, we're going to start with a massive news yesterday, seemingly coming out of nowhere. UVA men's basketball head coach Tony Bennett, who won a national championship just a couple years ago with the Wahoos, announces that he is retiring just under 3 weeks ahead of the start of the regular season for UVA. He's supposed to speak in a matter of moments to hopefully, by the end of this segment, we'll have a better understanding of why he's deciding to retire 3 weeks before the season starts, but it's shocking nonetheless.
An incredible run for Tony Bennett at Virginia. It certainly would appear it's not health-related. I think ESPN reported that last night, that their sources said it was not health-related. Look, like Jay Wright, like Nick Saban, you know, I'm not putting him into that category. He won one national championship, and, you know, Saban and Jay Wright a lot more than that. But Tony Bennett, probably like a lot of coaches, it's not what they signed up for. You know, college sports has changed, and if you already have the accomplishments, the resume, and by the way, the bank account to back it up, you know, you probably get tired of, you know, re-recruiting your own players, you know, year in and year out, sometimes within the same season, re-recruiting your players. Things are going to have to change when it comes to the portal and NIL. There's going to have to be some structure around it rather than what it's been. But you've seen, you know, coaches essentially say, yeah, this isn't fun anymore. And a lot of you would say, well, too bad. I mean, you're making $4, 5, 6, 7, 8 million a year. Things change, you know, in employment situations. Deal with it. And if you don't want to, that's fine too. Because, you know, they're not digging ditches, that's for sure. But it isn't what, you know, a lot of these guys like to do. They like to coach. You know, they like to focus on a practice plan, a game plan for the next opponent. Recruiting's always been a part of the sport, but that's changed completely with unrestricted annual free agency, which is what college players have. It'll be interesting to hear what he says. Look, the retiring on the eve of a season beginning is problematic. I'm not saying that it is for Virginia, because maybe they knew this all along, or they've known it here recently. You know, sometimes you'll see coaches do this. Dean Smith did this, but he did it because he wanted Bill Guthridge, his longtime assistant, to be given the opportunity to take the job and run with it, rather than them having a big offseason search. Maybe that's Tony Bennett's plan. Maybe he's got an assistant. You know, he's got that one guy that's been with him for a long period of time. Not Sanchez, the guy that's been with him for 3 or 4 years, the guy that coached at Charlotte. I think it's Williford, Jason Williford. Maybe, you know, he wants one of those guys to be elevated to head coach and not to have a full search land on some big name if he had called it quits at the end of last year, and give that longtime assistant an opportunity, because it's too late to go out and find somebody. You know, they're going to have to name one of the assistants the coach for 2024-2025. I don't know what the reasons for doing it so late were. I just know this. This guy could coach. I mean, he could really coach. Stylistically, so much different. You know, remember the JT 3 years at Georgetown, and people said, it's the Princeton offense, and he can't recruit because of it. The truth was JT3's offense wasn't exactly the Princeton offense all the time. And by the way, Georgetown hasn't won at that level since JT3 left. He was a hell of a coach too. But Tony Bennett with this style, with, you know, the pack line defense, with turning games into fewer possession games, you know, using a lot of the shot clock, you know, that does affect recruiting, but it didn't matter. He won. He won big, you know, while he was there. Tony Bennett will go down. He was almost in the top five. He's number six all time on the list of ACC coaching wins. You know, he was at UVA for the he has 364 wins as a head coach, sixth behind Coach K, Dean Smith, Roy Williams, Gary Williams, and Leonard Hamilton. Ahead of Kremen's lefty, Terry Holland, in the ACC in terms of wins. Most importantly, he got UVA the title. You know, they had won ACC tournaments. They had won ACC regular seasons. They were a dominant force in the ACC during his time. And yet they had not done anything in the tournament. They had some of those backbreaking Sweet 16 losses, Elite Eight losses to Michigan State, to Syracuse. And then obviously the incredible embarrassment and disappointment of losing in the first round to UMBC in 2018, the first one seed to lose to a 16 seed. But he came back the next year and they won the national championship. And at Virginia, where basketball is important, you know, they've had some good football runs at UVA, but at its core, kind of like Maryland, it is a basketball first school, like a lot of the traditional longtime ACC schools were, you know, other than Clemson and Florida State. And they had had, you know, runs. They had had that incredible 4-year stretch of Ralph Sampson of being ranked number one in the country, pretty much top three to top five throughout. You know, they went to one Final Four in Ralph's sophomore year and lost to North Carolina in the national semifinals. And then they got beat in Atlanta in the Elite Eight game in that incredible 1983 NC State run. They lose to the Wolfpack there. The NC State Wolfpack go on to win that title with Valvano. Virginia does not get their championship with Ralph. Jeff Jones took them to a Final Four. The next year after Ralph, they went to the Final Four with Terry Holland. And then Jeff Jones took them deep into the tournament. Not the Final Four, but took them to an Elite Eight appearance or two. But nobody won like Tony Bennett won at Virginia. His winning percentage overall, 728 win percentage overall in his years at UVA, a 700 win percentage in ACC games during that stretch. After the first couple of years, they just became an absolute juggernaut. You know, 10 tournament appearances in his years at UVA. Just a great basketball coach. System, he had one. And it was so hard to score against them. They shortened those games. You had to make the most out of every possession. And then you had to guard for much of the shot clock. And if you thought you could fast break against them, forget it. They didn't send anybody to the offensive glass. Everybody was back on defense. Loved watching his teams over the years. Thought he was a phenomenal basketball coach, sometimes doing it with less talent than the Dukes and the Carolinas. You know, even, you know, for a couple of years, he got there for Gary's last 2 years, you know, in College Park. Just an outstanding basketball coach. I mean, really, UVA during his tenure in the ACC, it's their best run ever, obviously, with a national championship to show for it, thankfully. You know, there aren't a lot of teams in that league as an ACC person and a Maryland person that I rooted for, you know, Duke and Carolina. But when UVA won it, God, I wanted them to win that title. Really wanted them to win it. Their fan base had yearned for it, had waited lifetimes for that moment. And they got it. You know, and they didn't have a chance to defend it the next year because of COVID. But they were pretty good that next year. And, you know, just an outstanding coach. Shocking to me. I don't know if for UVA people in the know if it was shocking. Maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. It'll be interesting to hear his explanation today during his presser. Outstanding coach. Father was a great coach, you know, was incredible at Washington State, to the tournament a few times. Good run for UVA. And look, it's a really good basketball school and a phenomenal basketball conference. If whomever the interim coach is this year, if he doesn't win big and if they go out searching, that'll be an enticing job. They'll be able to pay there. They've got a great fan base. They've got great facilities. They've got a great arena. They're in a great league. They've got history. You know, they'll be able to find a really solid coach at UVA. All right, what else, Dutton?
Real quick, just following up on that, he's talking now. It doesn't look like there's like a massive reason. I mean, he said one of the quotes was, "I realized I'm no longer the best coach to lead the program." And then he answered another question, or I don't know if he's doing a monologue, but he says it's right for student athletes to receive revenue. So it doesn't feel like he was forced out of this by NIL. Maybe that played some sort of role into it. I also thought that he made a really unique comment at the beginning of his press conference. He said, I gave everything I can for 15 years. I was so excited to test myself as a coach against Hall of Fame coaches. And when you think about when he joined UVA, like Gary was still at Maryland. Obviously, you had Coach K at Duke. You had Roy at UNC. I do wonder if the changing landscape of the ACC not being as strong maybe killed his passion a little bit, because it certainly has felt like over the past couple of years that the ACC is very much down compared to what it was when it was in the mid-2000s when he joined, or late 2000s when he joined.
Here's the money quote. I'm reading it right now. John Rothstein, I just tweeted it out. Tony Bennett, quote, "The game and college athletics are not in a healthy spot. I think I was equipped to do the job the old way," closed quote. There you go. You know, another coach who just, it's a different job. It's a different challenge. And, you know, he's accomplished. He's got a resume that's a borderline Hall of Fame resume at this point. Probably is. And he's tired of chasing his own players, re-recruiting his own players in season after one season, you know, having to deal with the collectives and the money that's being raised to go out and recruit. You know, by the way, it's hard enough to recruit the old way. That was hard enough, you know, especially in recent years with, you know, so many schools basically paying players long before it became legal to pay players. You know, that was a big, you know, gripe for many, many years. I'm not talking about UCLA and a lot of, you know, UNLV. I'm talking about, you know, over the last 10 years, you know, Will Wade and play at LSU and places like that. Sean Miller at Arizona, you know, guys that were getting wiretapped, basically offering up money, you know, and that was hard enough. But now, you know, there's the quote, right? "The game in college athletics are not in a healthy spot. I think I was equipped to do the job the old way." I think there's always room, by the way, with a great coach and a great resume, on even a day like this, to wonder, why did you do it now? You recruited players. They committed to UVA for you. Transfers committed to UVA. I don't know what their squad looked like this year. I don't know the reason for it. And it may be that he just got to that realization recently. And sometimes you think they should stick it out for the year, at least, to commit back to the players that committed to them. But the commitments right now are so fleeting and so short-term anyway. But, yeah, interesting. He's a Hall of Fame coach.
Definitely. Oh, definitely. I mean, you gave the numbers. He was the best coach in the ACC for a period of time that had Roy Williams and Coach K still in the conference.
Yeah, no doubt.
And he also made me a lot of money when he won a championship. So I like that, too. More basketball news. Tough day for you and I yesterday. Kawhi Leonard out indefinitely. I don't know that we're ever going to see Kawhi Leonard play meaningful basketball again. It's like a re-inflammation of that right knee that's been bothering him for, I don't know, like a decade, it feels like, at this point. So he's out indefinitely, not going to start the season for the Clippers. I'm bummed. You know, Kawhi is going to be We argue a lot about like generations. Imagine in 20 years trying to explain how good Kawhi was to like the next young generation that does not want to validate anything the older generation has ever done.
Look, I've been a big fan of his. I just don't know that over the last, you know, 10 to 12 years, if there's been healthy, when he's been healthy, a better two-way player in the game. And I also think that when he was healthy, he was a big-time clutch performer as well. But he's also a different guy. He hasn't been easy in the spots that he's been in. And then he's been injured consistently year in and year out now for several years. And he just can't get healthy. You know, whether it's load management, that didn't work last year. They went with, okay, we're going to lessen the load management. And then he's having, at one point last year, he was having a borderline MVP season. He had about a month and a half stretch where he was the best player in the league last year. And then you get towards the end of the year, and he gets hurt again, and he's not available for the postseason. He tried to play in a game or two, but he was not physically able to do it. I mean, look, that team's changed, obviously, with the Paul George trade anyway. But there were big expectations, I think, with he and George together. And George wasn't always healthy. But that's a good point. It's going to be really hard. Look, he's a first ballot lock Hall of Famer. You know, there's no doubt about that. I think it's going to be hard, though, to explain that, yeah, he was a two-time finals MVP. He was perhaps at times during his career for long stretches the best combined offensive-defensive player. He was big-time clutch when they needed him to be in the postseason when he was healthy. But basically, you know, over the last few years, he was unable to participate in the playoffs. He's 33. They think that he'll be back. They think they're handling it the right way right now, and they're just not going to put him out there early in the season to risk it. But that's not a team that's going to, you know, weren't they at one point last year, weren't they pretty close to the one seed? That stretch where he had a great run, like in, I don't know, was it December, January, February? Maybe January, February.
It was around that like winter time frame when James Harden started to play really well. Russ was playing all right. Like they really were putting something together, and then it kind of fell off a bit.
Yeah, then it fell off a bit, and he got hurt. Yeah, his career is going to be a tough one to explain. That's a good point, because not only that, just, you know, he left a dynastic situation in San Antonio. Didn't like the way they handled his injuries. He has not been an easy guy. You know, he's definitely a different guy. He is incredibly, incredibly introverted. All right, what else?
All right, how about some of those baseball games? You kind of mentioned it. This is the game-winning home run from that Cleveland 10th inning showdown with New York.
Swing on, hit high, hit deep to left. There she goes.
Just an
was
absolute
that the Noel homer or the Fry homer?
That was the David Fry two-run shot in the bottom of the 10th. An absolute no-doubter. And Cleveland gets their first win of the series to make it 2-1 against the Yankees.
Yeah, that was the MLB playoffs at its best. You had in the 8th inning, in a 3-1 Cleveland game, Judge come up after Soto had walked, and he hits one opposite field home run. The first time he's hit a home run in the postseason where it gave his team a lead like late in a game. And then Stanton comes up next at bat. He goes deep. So you're thinking, oh, it's over. The Yankees are going to win this game, because both of those home runs were hit off of Clase, the best reliever in the game. And then in the 9th, you get this guy, Big Christmas Noel, who comes up two outs. Lane Thomas hits one deep off the wall. He's in there for a double, so the tying runs at the plate against their best closer, and Noel cranked one 404 feet. That was actually, in many ways, the more dramatic of the two homers. If you were asking me to rank the two home runs, or the four home runs hit in the 8th and the 9th and 10th innings, the Noel home run was the most dramatic, because they're down to their last out. Nobody's on base. Lane Thomas comes up. He gets on base. And then Noel, as a pinch hitter, comes in, two-strike count. Was it two strikes on him? It was two strikes on Fry. I think it was two strikes on Noel. Maybe it was a one-strike count on Noel. But you're down to your last out, and he just murdered that ball. I mean, that was a bigger no. I mean, Fry actually waited a little bit. He wasn't sure. Noel was 100% sure. Incredible, dramatic, game-tying two-run homer in the bottom of the ninth that goes to extras. Did you know, by the way, that was the first postseason game to go to extra innings, that game last night between Cleveland and New York? And then they get an incredible defensive play in the top of the 10th at first base. And then you get the Fry home run, two-run shot. That was a two-strike count. The Noel at bat was a one-ball count. My fault. Yeah, it was the second pitch. And he just absolutely annihilated the changeup from Weaver. That was exciting. Baseball's great when it's like that.
I mean, under the lights, raucous environment, that's everything you want in a game.
Cleveland fans actually, If you look at the crowd prior to the Judge and Stanton home runs, and then you look at it with two outs in the ninth, people had left. People had left the ballpark. There were empty seats, scattered throughout because they thought it was over, down 5-3, headed to the bottom of the ninth, especially when they're two outs. I mean, that's the cool thing about baseball. It's never over. There's not a clock. It's not like they're taking knees. You still get to have that last at bat. And then the other one after Lane Thomas doubled. Really, really fun to watch. Dramatic. Cleveland fans are awesome, even though some of them left there. But that place was a madhouse. What else? Anything else?
A little less of a madhouse in the second game. I mean, the Dodgers, their offense is on fire at the moment. So they beat the Mets 10-2. Ohtani hit a massive homer again. They look like they're playing their best baseball at the best time.
Yeah. Ohtani last night was 1-for-3 with another home run. He also scored 4 times because he walked 3 times. He had a stretch. I think it was a 2 or 3 game stretch without a hit. Prior to the last two games, he's gone back-to-back games with home runs. I'm looking at it. Well, no, it was 2 out of 3 games without a hit. But still on fire now. With back-to-back games, home runs. They're up 3-1. We get another game today in New York this afternoon, and then Yankees Cleveland tonight, Game 4. Dodgers might put it away.
Yeah, the Dodgers could put it away tonight if they really start to play well, which they have. I mean, if they continue this, it's going to be over.
Yeah, I think this one's probably over. Although, people have counted the Mets out all year long, and they keep fighting back. All right, we got a guest from Charlotte who's going to be on with us to talk Panthers at 11:35. I'll hold off on the smell test. I was going to do it next. I'll hold off until next hour. Something Cliff Kingsbury said yesterday that I want you to hear. We'll get to that next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and, for shoppers, buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Money Movers provides investors with real-time analysis of the stories and the people attracting the attention of markets each day. I'm Carl Quintanilla.
And I'm Sarah Eisen. We'll cover the breaking news and numbers driving stocks and sectors, helping you make critical decisions. Plus, we'll speak with the CEOs, newsmakers, and political leaders playing a role in how your money is moving.
Listen to CNBC's Money Movers free on the Odyssey app.
Two Cliff Kingsbury sound bites from yesterday's coordinator press conference day that I wanted to play. This was Kingsbury when he was asked about Jaden Daniels last week, kind of throwing into tight windows. And there were a bunch of those tight window throws, or, you know, those windows in which the ball's got to be kind of thrown low outside, keep it out of harm's way. Here's what he said.
Yeah, he continues to work really hard. And, you know, he made those in college. And that's what we saw on tape, was the ability to play on time and make accurate throws where the guys can catch him in space and continue to run. So I think all his work is paying off in the fact that the game's starting to slow down a little bit each week, more and more each week, and hopefully that continues. But he's definitely working at it, and he had some big-time throws that converted some big-time third downs the other day.
Yeah, he did. And Kingsbury went on to talk about, by the way, the lack of a running game. And he said he put it on himself. He said that, you know, they got to run it better. They've got to keep their defense off the field as much as it was on the field. And said, you know, Brian, as in Brian Robinson Jr., he said he's a tremendous player, but he said they were really good and stout against the run, and they knew that going in. I would expect Sunday there to be a concerted effort to rush for 200-plus yards again. This is what they have the capability of doing. I'm not saying at the expense of any, you know, explosive or throwing the football, but against this particular defense, totally different from the one they faced a week ago. And then this was Kingsbury talking about that flea flicker play, the play in which Jeremy McNichols, you know, pitched it back to Jaden. It was not a good pitch. Jaden was able to corral the ball, on a pitch that almost got away from him. And then the play was not your typical flea flicker play, which you typically are looking downfield for a big play. It was to set up a screen. Here's what he said about that play.
Yeah, I got to cite my sources always. It's a Jeff Brohm play. He did it at Purdue. And obviously we have David Blau, who played for Jeff Brohm. So David Blau had brought that one up, and we ended up – they threw it to a tight end. We ended up sneaking Austin back there, and it ended up working out. The guys executed it perfectly because they brought a pressure, which even made it better. But, yeah, that's – shout out Jeff Brohm for that one.
That's such a great design. Jeff Brohm, the head coach at Louisville. By the way, I think Jeff Brohm and Jay Gruden are probably friends, both Louisville guys. But when he was at Purdue, David Blau was the quarterback at Purdue. You know, you don't see that often. I mean, you see quarterbacks look off the deep throw because the defense didn't bite and they come back to something maybe in the form of a check down. But, you know, a screen that way? Interesting. To see that play. I think a lot of times the plays in which you get defense thinking deep and you can come back to a check down or to a screen, those are usually really effective, you know, 10-plus, 15-plus yard plays. But gave credit to where it was due. Jeff Brohm, the head coach at Louisville, did it when he was at Purdue with David Blau. David Blau on the staff, a lot of people very impressed with this guy as part of the staff. All right, when we come back, we'll go down to Charlotte and we'll talk Panthers. We'll do that right after these words from a few of our sponsors. You're listening to the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team980.com. Sunday 4:05 is the kick at Northwest Stadium, Landover, Washington, an 8-point favorite over the Panthers, who come in 1-5 into this one. Travis Hancock is the co-host of the Mac and Bone Show on 92.7 FM in Charlotte. He joins us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. Travis, thanks. Real quickly, before we get to the game, I'm just curious in, you know, the Carolinas, how big of a topic today is the Tony Bennett retiring story for you guys?
It's been a massive deal, you know, with all the college football teams down here. And, of course, the Panthers taking on Washington on Sunday. That's the paramount stories. But no doubt that Tony Bennett, a massive deal here because we're already, you know, down here, the landscape of college basketball here in the Carolinas, you know what that means down here.
Yeah.
It's an ever-changing thing, and we already have a hard enough time. I'm a Duke fan. Don't hold that against me, but it's already hard enough for a lot of fans to know who's on the Duke roster. There's an ever-changing landscape of guys in the portal for all the teams down here in the Carolinas. But what's been identifiable for so long has been the coaches. Roy at UNC, well, that changed. Kay at Duke, that changed. And then, you know, Tony Bennett was synonymous with Virginia, and now that changes. And so it's been yet another thing down here where we have to stop and say, man, how much has the sport that means so much down here really been altered yet again in quite a shocking way? Not shocking that a coach would leave the sport now, but I think it's all about the timing of when he did it.
Yeah, that is definitely, you know, worthy of a discussion. Look, I'm a Maryland guy, and yeah. I, you know, it's been 10 years now, if you can believe it, that we've been out of the ACC, and it's still hard for me to get used to the new digs in the Big Ten. But then again, I mean, you know, Duke's going to play SMU and Cal in conference games this year. That's just stupid, right?
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
It is. It doesn't make any sense, and you could go through all the conferences and find, you know, we got Rutgers is playing UCLA, that old storied rivalry, right, of Rutgers playing UCLA. Yeah. But no, it's a hit for all. You know, you're a Maryland guy, and we love the sport, but you know, we're losing a lot of what we know about it. There's still some names hanging around, but they're getting older, like Cal, Patino, Izzo, Self. They're big names. But they're gone, and you expected Tony Bennett and Jay Wright, although not young per se. We thought those were two guys that were the next guys that were going to be the iconic legends to carry the sport into the next, you know, decade or so. And man, it's quite shocking that we're at this point now, where even Tony Bennett, a guy we all counted on as being a guy forever there, that he's gone too. So yeah, it is a big deal here, to answer your question.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sport because of, you know, the same reason you, the same reason me, growing up as an ACC basketball fan, lifelong. It's just different. I think the sport overall, Travis, it's a 1 month out of the year sport. You know, over the last 10 years, basically, you know, the casual sports fan never pays attention until March. And even the hardcore fan, it's hard to pay attention until March, in part because the NFL's just become so dominant year-round. But it's just not the same.
Yeah, even here, like on our show, like we get heavy into it, but you're right. It's usually the first Duke-Carolina game that kind of sets the tone here, where people start to notice. And even the diehard fans are there during Feast Week, but you know, that's really the time when the casuals start. It takes something to happen in that game. So we're really locked in from mid-February till the end. But you're right, you know, even November, December now, despite a lot of great games being played, it takes the average casual fan until football is completely done to really buy it. So it's a byproduct of college basketball coming down to what we know growing up, and football just dominating the entire landscape.
Real quickly, is Duke in football? Do they win tomorrow or not?
It's actually today against Florida.
Oh, that's
Florida
right.
State.
It's tonight. My
yeah,
fault.
Yeah. They have that. Yeah, they have that always prime game. Everybody's eyes are on the ACC Friday night game. Yeah, they got Florida State at home. They're 3-point favorites. They have not beaten Florida State ever. It's 20 in a row since Florida State joined the conference. It feels like now would be the time, but you know, college football is crazy, man. You never really know who's what week to week. Florida State's down. They played a little better against Clemson despite being blown out. Duke, one loss. It's to Georgia Tech. Good start for Manny Diaz. They play the games relatively close, though. So I think Duke wins, but I think this is going to be one that comes down to the end because that's the way kind of Duke plays the games. And I think they'll figure out a way, but it might be very close, I think, to that three-point spread.
Yeah, Denton, I'm kind of liking the Noles tonight plus the points. It seems like everybody thinks Duke wins and Florida State's season is sunk. I actually thought Florida State played Clemson much tougher than maybe the final score indicated in their last game. Anyway,
yeah,
let's get to Sunday. First of all, let me just start with this: is Bryce Young going to ever get another opportunity in Carolina?
Yeah, I think he's going to play at some point this year just because they have to figure out, you know, the evaluation of him. Like, what do they think of him? So he's got to mentally, I think, rest for a while. But I think just for trying to figure out what his value is going into the offseason. So as I've said, you know, the last, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 games maybe, because you need to know what he is coming back off the bench. It may not be for yourself. You know, you've got to try to judge what's the potential trade value. So I think he's going to have to get in there. The problems are so deep. There was a lot of issues, and you guys are Washington fans. You guys know when it comes to, you know, organizations that just can't seem to ever get it right. And Bryce Young last year had to learn 3 different playbooks in his first offseason. Frank Reich kept changing the playbook. Three play caller changes back and forth throughout the year. So last year we felt, yeah, how does any rookie quarterback overcome all that with a bad team anyway? So we thought Dave Canales comes in this year, you know, Bryce is going to take that leap up away from last year. Only one guy in his ear now as opposed to last year. The problem was last year, I'm sure it's happened in D.C. before too, the kid appears traumatized by how bad it was last year. So he's got physical limitations. And he was mentally strong coming out of Bama, but he got completely wrecked by this organization where he has to sit, mentally rest. Shouldn't be in there now, although he is a direct backup to Dalton, which is kind of weird that he's so close to the field. But I think end of the year for the evaluation of him, he's got to play, but certainly right now he needs to sit for as long as he can.
So you brought it up, and we're talking to Travis Hancock from 92.7 FM Sports Radio in Charlotte. Yes, we're very familiar with dysfunction, you know, a quarter century of the worst-owned team in professional sports. And I've suggested recently that Carolina and David Tepper may have taken the Snyder mantle. Do you agree or disagree?
Oh, 100%. I mean, chasing the quarterbacks and the constant changing of coaches and the fan base that, you know, just wants the owner to somehow go, even though you can't trade or cut an owner. It's not how it works. But that mindset of tired of the owner, business decisions that are questionable. So, yeah, I don't think it's exact because Daniel Snyder, there's a lot of layers to the whole comparison. It's not exact, but I think in terms of how the community feels about him, the lack of winning, the constantly chasing something instead of doing maybe what's better for the franchise, constant quarterback trades, GM changes. Oh, yeah, we talk about it all the time. He had a business deal down here for the practice facility right across the border in a city in South Carolina. They were putting a practice facility. It fell apart, and he got into a back and forth with the government of that city. And one of the guys in the process publicly called him Daniel Snyder. And apparently,
really?
Like, it made him, oh, yeah, and he got, you know, from what we know, he does not like that. So that may have caused a rift there. That went, yeah, he got called in an online, I don't know if it was audio, it might have been audio for him, but, yeah, he got called the new Daniel Snyder, and he did not like that. So that is very, very, very much a thing that is talked about often about where we are right now.
All right, let's talk about the game. I watched the game last week. I think Hubbard's one of the better backs and maybe one of the more underrated backs in the league. And offensively, if they don't turn it over and they don't get penalized, they actually are capable. Am I wrong?
Yeah, that's exactly it. The formula for them to have success, and the one time they did against the Raiders, Andy Dalton's first game, it kind of played out that way where the Panthers almost have to play as perfect a game as they can. No turnovers. They have to try to get a lead because Chuba Hubbard is that good. He's on pace for 1,384 yards this year. That's 13 yards off the all-time pace for a Panther season set by McCaffrey. And they have to go away from him a lot, Kevin, because they get so far behind, they can't actually churn out a lot of yards. So he's picking up yards. He could have a 1,500-yard season if they actually had a lead. But they can't turn it over. And they almost have to have the other team kind of melt down and gift them stuff. The Raiders, when they beat them and blew them out, they were awful that day. They were beating themselves. They weren't there. They were a terrible football team. So the Panthers have to play at their highest level that they can. No turnovers. Get the run game going. And the other team almost has to just have one of those, oh, my gosh, we fell apart days. And the offense can score 30 points. And Washington can still win this game, 41-30. This is right now, and this isn't hyperbole, the numbers bear out, the worst Panther defense ever. And there's a lot of reasons for that, injuries and a couple guys that you have there, and Luvu and Chin, and there's things that have happened here. Derrick Brown out for the year.
Right.
But, yeah, no, the offense can get humming here against Washington or anybody, and they still may lose by 10. It's just the way they are right now.
Yeah, I mean, Washington's had a very difficult time stopping the run. I mean, they are not a good run-stopping team. I think they're 30th in yards per carry against. And really, in some of their games where they had big leads, Arizona and Cleveland, the other teams were reduced to throwing the football. If they can run the football and hold on to it, I think it could be a game. But defensively, bad because of the injuries, or is it just bad because of the personnel in addition to the injuries?
Well, it was going to be a step back because when you lose Luvu, especially Chin here, Jeremy Chin, it just wasn't working out. So a change of scenery probably was for the best. Luvu was kind of the heart and soul of the operation last year. And that was, we know that he wanted to play for Dan Quinn. So we kind of knew what was, where that was headed, but we're taking him out of there. Brian Burns gets traded to the Giants. Derrick Brown, who is absolutely unbelievable to watch every game.
He is.
At defensive back. Underrated to some degree nationally, but he goes out game one for a team that was already going to kind of have some defensive issues. You take those guys away. Shaq Thompson goes out for the year. They've had injuries all over the place for a team that we were just hoping could play average. Even I've never seen Mr. maneuvering and all these things, and they're just trying to hang on for dear life from the onset of games. The thing that really scares us about the matchup against the Commanders is they can't stop the run at all anyway. And we've seen this year against the Panthers, Joe Burrow escape pressure. Caleb Williams escape pressure. They faced Carr and Herbert. They haven't exactly faced anyone nearly as dynamic as Jaden Daniels is. So we're thinking, man, if they're having trouble stopping running backs and quarterbacks that aren't necessarily the quarterbacks that run the football, this could be a very long day when you factor in the run game with the backs for you guys and Jaden Daniels. This is another element that they haven't had to deal with yet this year, and they've already had problems stopping quarterbacks that can't move very well.
Last one. Do you expect them to be sellers as we approach the trade deadline? I mean, Deontay Johnson's name's been mentioned a lot. I've seen J.C. Horn's name mentioned a couple of times. What do you think Carolina does before the trade deadline?
Kevin, great question, because on ESPN yesterday, Adam Schefter put up his 10 possible trade guys, and five of them, I think, were Carolina Panthers. So we actually got on a graphic one time where we led the league in something. It was most tradable players. I don't think J.C. Horn gets down. He's too valuable. We talk about all the guys that are gone. No, they need him for the future. He's got to be there. Deontay Johnson's fascinating. Also, by the way, keep in mind, he's not practiced the last couple of days. We don't exactly know his status. If he's not in there, that's major trouble. Now, Deontay Johnson's a name talked about a lot because Kansas City needs wideouts. The GM here, or excuse me, like the cap guy here, Brant Tillis, came from Kansas City. So there's a natural tie-in there. So Deontay, a free agent coming up. Yeah, he comes up there. I don't think they should, but it wouldn't shock me. The guy you mentioned in there that people may not realize is a free agent that we talk about a lot is Chuba Hubbard. The guy I mentioned getting all the yards, he's a free agent coming up this offseason. And the Panthers in this past draft moved up and took the first running back in the draft in the 40s, Jonathan Brooks, the kid out of Texas. So now we're thinking, like, you made the move up for Brooks. Chuba's a free agent. He's very valuable. But if he's a top five running back in the league, what's he going to command? So Chuba Hubbard is a name. I would say for sure I think he'd be dealt, but I don't know, man. You could see a team like Dallas or somebody like that.
I was going to say, that's the obvious place is Dallas is looking for a running back.
He's a free agent. He's knocking on the door for what would be a big payday for running backs now. So Deontay and Chuba are two names that we're talking about a lot. I wouldn't say absolutely they're gone, but I don't know. It's going to be fascinating to see where they go with all these guys that could be dealt.
All right. Thanks for this, Travis. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Appreciate you, Kevin.
Yep. Travis Hancock, everybody, at T-Bone WFNZ on X on Twitter. He is the co-host of the Mac and Bone Show on 92.7 FM Sports in Charlotte. Yeah, you know, you look at their roster. That's interesting. So Hubbard's a pending free agent. They're not going anywhere this year. Are they going to sign him when they drafted Jonathan Brooks, you know, early? What do you think they could get from the Cowboys for Hubbard right now?
Probably at least definitely a fourth. I can't imagine.
I was going to say probably like a fourth, you know, a fourth rounder. That would not totally fix Dallas's issues, but it certainly would help if they had a back and they could run the football. But they got issues so many other places. Denton, he's really good.
He is.
Like, he has really good balance, really good quick vision. I mean, never takes a direct hit. When he does, he's able to, you know, still stay up and get yards after contact. He's on pace for 1,300 yards. And like Travis said, they've been in games where they've basically had to abandon the run and start throwing the football. The key for them, you know, if they're even worried about trying to win a football game, is to stay in the game score-wise so that they can continue to keep him a big part of what they're doing offensively. And it is a matchup for them that's perfect, because they're going against a real flawed run-stopping defense. This is the thing that I would be concerned about that. I think he said something else too. You can't let them get a lead and play like they are in the game. They got a lead last week, but it got away from them in part because of turnovers in the second half, and the game got sideways. But it was a one-score game with them on the move before one of Dalton's two picks in the second half against the Falcons. If he doesn't, you know, throw a couple of picks, and look, Washington's not taking the ball away from anybody at a high rate. They've got four total takeaways on the season, one pick. If they don't turn it over, if they don't self-inflict early in drives with penalties, I think they're going to score. You know, I think they could easily score 24, 27 plus. But like Travis said, Washington should be able to score 30 plus. Feels kind of like an over game. Carolina, Washington.
Don't you think everyone's going to be on the over, though? Isn't that against
your
code?
Yeah, they were last week, too, and they were right.
That's true.
Last week was the single biggest public Sunday in over a decade. Sportsbooks took the biggest bath and beating they've taken in over 10 years. What were favorites last week? 11-2-1, something like that. 10-3-1, whatever it was. I was right there with them. It did not work out well for me either. Usually they bounce back with big weeks, but they had already had some big weeks NFL-wise through the first 5 weeks of the season. You know, the NFL was crushing. Sports books were crushing the public better for the first 5 weeks. But, man, they got it back last week in 1 week in a big way. Interesting matchup Sunday. I feel like this game is just our fan base is like, 5-2, chalk it up. When have we been able to say chalk it up against anybody? They should be able to move the football, though, no doubt. They should be able to move it and score points, and the key is just, you know, stopping them a few times. You know, create that 2-score lead, and then, you know, it's pretty much over. All right, Denton and I will do the NFL's other games on Sunday next. By the way, there are some big games in the 1 o'clock window and the biggest game of the year when you're talking about a Super Bowl rematch in the late afternoon window. We'll do that. Smell test coming up next hour. Denton will do a quick college football preview. We've got one of the biggest games of the year on Saturday night, Georgia and Texas. We'll predict Washington, Carolina as well. All of that and more coming up on the Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This is the secret story of a young Russian oligarch who hacked his way to a $93 million fortune. I'm CNBC senior Washington correspondent Eamon Javers. In our new podcast, The Crimes of Putin's Traitor, I'll take you inside a shocking Russian crime targeting the American financial system. Attacks that sources tell me were welcomed by Vladimir Putin's government. Listen to CNBC's The Crimes of Putin's Traitor free on the Odyssey app.